Hi, welcome to Cloud Cover. I'm Chris Reisner. Today we're doing something a little bit special. We've got some guest hosts and a special guest, and they're going to start a new series we're going to do as part of Cloud Cover that's going to focus on some of our deep machine learning capabilities here at Microsoft. So without anything else, I'm just going to go ahead and hand it off to them.
Hello, this is Mustafa Kasap. I am an engineer in Microsoft. Today we have a special guest, Sayan Patak, and co-host Michael Lanzetta. We have really interesting topics on CNTK, a cognitive toolkit of Microsoft. It's an open source toolkit where Sayan will mention more details. Sayan and Michael, do you have some additions?
So I'm looking forward to this series, and what we were thinking of is to introduce you to this open source toolkit from Microsoft called the Cognitive Toolkit, formerly known as CNTK. And this talk is going to be introducing folks to the different tenets of deep learning, making familiar with the data, as well as some of the programming concepts. All of this is going to be backed up with tutorials that are available from a GitHub source that you can find out later on in the talk. And I'm hoping that you would be leveraging some of these concepts into building your own solutions. So whom this is for, what is this? This series is about introducing deep learning with CNTK, and we will provide end-to-end recipes, and we will also have a range of topics from elementary to advanced techniques. Obviously, this being the first one, it's going to be a bit elementary for those of you who are familiar with it, but hang on, there's nuggets of information that will help you become very proficient with using CNTK quickly, should you follow the tenets that we have in place that has worked for many of us at Microsoft and outside Microsoft to use CNTK today.
And we'll provide much more theoretical information also together with the Cognitive Toolkit.
Yeah, we'll provide a visual theory, if you might say, because a lot of our learners are visual learners. There's a bit of mathematics involved in it, but we have kept it and on top of the visual, so you'll, for both visual and people who are mathematically inclined, will have content.
Great, cool.
Again, this who is my audience here? We are looking for people who are data science, from the field of data science and new to deep learning. We have machine learning scientists who are looking for advanced techniques, and engineers are looking for means to scale and leverage cloud computing in Azure.
Yeah. Now, with the language, are you planning on doing mostly Python?
Yeah, today, this talk is going to be oriented around Python.
Great.
There are very convenient Jupyter notebooks that are available to you that you can run in Azure notebooks for free if you choose to, or download the toolkit on your own workstation and get a performance out of your local hardware that you might have to run the same notebooks with data sets provided, all canned in one nice set of tutorials, string of tutorials that we will cover in this series.
Yeah, at the end of this series video, we will be sharing the links, so you can just click and start immediately working on the examples also.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
All right. So first task, this is like 101 for machine learning and definitely for deep learning as well. We start with the example of optical character recognition. We are going to start with MNIST database, which is very popular in the machine learning community. And it's a database of handwritten digits, about 60,000 training images and 10,000 test images.
And now, when you say training images and test images, what do you mean by that?
So, good question. With training images, we mean when we train a model, which you'll know shortly what I mean by model, you have to feed it some representative data to learn what those parameters of the models are.
Okay.
And this is important because you train on a set of data and determine those models, but you do not use the same data, same set of images, to evaluate what performance of that model would be in real world.
Okay.
So for that, we have these test images. So we'll show you how you can train and test your models. It's a fundamental aspect of machine learning, and one has to be very, very careful with it.
So the idea is that when you train on data, then when you're testing it, it's data that the model hasn't seen yet. So you have an idea of how it's going to perform kind of in the wild.
Correct. And okay. You don't want to mix and match, because then you will not get, in real world, you will be surprised with your model not doing as well.
Okay, that makes sense.
Data.
Yeah.
Yep. So here you have the handwritten digits and the corresponding labels for those digits. This example is an example of supervised learning, where there's data provided by the user for what the user and the corresponding labels here. So if you see, there's image one has the corresponding label one. Our goal would be to feed in these images into our machine later on, which I'll show you, and it will say, if you feed in this digit three, it will come out and say that, okay, this is the digit three that we have recognized from these image pixels. And if some of these terms are alien to you, it'll become very clear shortly.
So if you were to use like the Microsoft Cognitive Vision API, for instance, they would be trained in a very similar way, only the labels would be things like dog and cat?
Correct. And more so on things like very natural scene images, or we have seen people using it from medical sciences for various kind of skin lesion detections.
Oh, okay, cool.
And for diabetic retinopathy. And also recently there's a competition going on in Kaggle, and that is using for detection of lung cancer. So a lot of healthcare related focus going on right now.
Okay.
And there's also a gamut of training going on for automatic car driving and variety of aspects of the auto industry. And call what you have. If there's a deep learning problem, the code that I'm going to walk you through in this series is going to help you build those solutions very easily.
Okay. That will be the base.
Cool.
Okay. Yeah. So let's start with looking into one of these images. This is the image array that I'm given. And the first step you do, and we'll train a classifier, a very basic classifier called the logistic regression, which many of you may be very familiar with who have used machine learning, not necessarily deep learning. So I'm using this as a foundation to introduce some of the terminologies, and which we'll use later on in the series to show you how you can extend these into building deep learning, deep nets. Okay. So we start by taking an image here and laying out the pixels, as you can see here, and we will lay them out in an array. So for those...
Each row is side by side.
Yeah. You would take... You'll take a row and lay it down here. Take the second row, lay it down there, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
Okay? Oh, okay, that's cool.
All right. And then what you do, once you do that, you'll have an array.
Yeah.
Array of pixels, the numbers. And for those of you who are mathematically inclined, I have put some notations here. So you will be able to follow that as well.
Yeah.
So our goal here is to be able to build a classifier that will predict the different digits. In this case, there are 10 digits, 0 to 9. So say we want to predict the digit 0. What we want to do is learn these weights. These are the weights representing each one of these lines is a weight here, a number, which pairs along with the pixels in the input data that is represented by X. So there are going to be 784 of these lines, each corresponding to a pixel. You multiply that and sum it up. That's what this node is doing.
Okay.
Now we have done it for digit 0. We want to do it for digit 1.
With different weights?
It will be, initially you will choose some
random
weights, because you don't know what those weights are going to be.
Yeah.
But you start your modeling with these random weights, mm-hmm. and then you can, the system that will walk you through will help you train this automatically to derive weights. When trained, we'll be able to classify image of zero, digit zero, handwritten digits with all its variations to the corresponding class, and so on and so forth for all the digits. All right. So here are the 10 summation nodes, and these make up this matrix, really nice matrix. We see there are 10 rows and 784 columns, and this is the weight matrix that we will learn. And for those of you who are mathematically interested, this is a matrix, in this case, a weight matrix multiplied with the input vector of the image 3 in this case.
Yeah.
All right. So In addition to that weight matrix, we also add something called a bias, which is a scalar value, one scalar value per node. In this case, we have 10 of these, so there are 10 of these scalar values, one associated with each of these classifier, if you might say.
So if I look at this formula, it looks very similar to just like a formula for a line, right? You're looking at like y equals mx plus b kind of scenario. So
exactly.
You're really learning a linear model here?
Yes, this is a very simple linear classifier. Today we are going to restrict ourselves to this linear classifier because in the next session we will go into more deeper networks where we will combine these linear classifiers to make nonlinear classifiers.
Okay, so you're learning this linear model and then the logistic regression part is basically you're converting that into different classes.
Correct.
Right, okay.
And the logistic regression training of the model we'll show you later on how it automatically estimates these parameters, which are the weights and the corresponding bias.
Okay.
Yep. All right. So now you have these weights, this summation z, or one for each of the digits. We want to map them into a range of 0 to 1, such that 1 represents the very much, that digit being very likely to be present, and 0 being that it's very unlikely that the digit is going to be present in that image. So for instance, 0, if this image was 3, once we have trained the weights, the output of this node, when it passes through this particular node, which we call the activation node, will emit a value of, say, 0.1 or something like that, which is very low.
Yeah.
Okay, indicating that it's unlikely that this image is of the handwritten digit of 0. And this is what we call the model, this set of trained nodes with the corresponding weights and the bias is what we call the model. And the function that maps the output of the summation to a particular range is called an activation function.
Yes.
We'll get into the details of these in later parts of the series. Now, in order.
So activation function, we will go into details, but it's something like after some threshold, it will say this is digit one or not, just two logical operations, probably.
So you can have different kinds of activation functions. In this case, there's no threshold. It just takes a value of the summation and maps it, squashes it into the 0 to 1 range.
Yeah.
So it's kind of converting it into a probability that it's this sort of thing.
Yeah, it is converting into a 0 to 1 range, not exactly a probability, but a very good question because the next slide is going to talk about that.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
So here you see that with the whatever weights we had initially chosen, they're pretty reasonably good. Obviously, this is made up for this presentation so that you understand it easily. Initially, these won't be the case, but eventually when you train the model, the red square, which where you see the number is 0.9, indicates that the third digit, 0, 1, 2, 3, has the most likely representation of the image that we are trying to predict.
Yep. Okay, that makes sense.
Yep. All right. So coming to your question about whether the output of the sigmoid is a probability or not, we often rely on something called softmax. So this is so what we do is from the summation node, instead of passing it through a sigmoid activation function, which squashes the range that I was alluding to in the previous slide to 0 to 1, what we do is we do not do any such of mappings here.
Mm-hmm.
So the output is going to be some values, V0 to V9. These are the 10 values.
Mm-hmm.
We look into all the values and map it to a proper probability function, which normalize the values to such a number based on this mathematical formulation, such that the total sum of these values add up to 1.
Okay, so sigmoid is more just the function that kind of looks like that.
Correct.
And then softmax is something that actually takes these kind of arbitrary weights that you've gotten out of the model and maps it out to something that looks a lot more like an actual probability distribution.
Exactly.
Okay.
And we will use this in our subsequent training.
Yeah.
Okay. So now let's see. We have a model, which we have for this image 3. we have the corresponding data laid out in a linear array. This is our input. Mm-hmm. And we take this array, feed it into our magic box with the model.
Yeah.
And the parameters weight and the corresponding bias gets evaluated somehow. Either we magically figured it out, mm-hmm. or the training system that I'm going to elaborate in a bit, yeah. will help you get there.
Okay.
Okay. And you have the predicted probabilities that I talked in the previous slide.
Okay.
Now what I can do is I need to see how close these predicted probabilities are to the real data that has been provided by the user.
Yeah.
So in comes our labels that we have, associated labels to these images that we encode in something called a one-hot encoding, which means that...
Okay. I was going to ask you about that, because it seems like all you have is the one label, right?
Correct.
So how do you do that? Okay.
So this is a very popular way of doing it, where you have 10 digits, 0 to 9. So there are, you can create an array of 10, and wherever that digit appears, you would put a label of 1. Mm-hmm. So in this case, you can see the red box again, where you can see that I have put a 1 there, and rest of it is all 0.
Okay.
So if it was the ninth digit, if the image of instead of 3 was 9, the last purple box would be labeled as 1.
Okay, and that's called one-hot encoding?
This is called one-hot encoding.
Okay.
And now what I can do is go back to your high school algebra where you have done some fitting of lines mm-hmm. Against a set of points. And this is called a squared error. So yeah. we have the labels and we have the corresponding probabilities. What you can take is the difference of the two, and that will give you the error, how close these probabilities are to the number that is provided for yeah. training, which is the labels.
Yeah.
And ideally, you would like to see this to be 1 and rest of it 0, but that never happens in real life because of a variety of differences between how the system trains, but also there is a possibility, if you can think about it, a number 3 can...
Eight.
Be close yeah. to number 8. And so there is a likelihood here, however small, of 0.13 that the system thinks that it could be 8. But overwhelmingly, you can see that at this, with this random or the magical weights that I derived, which is not that great, I can see that this one is 0.17 and this one is 0.13.
Yeah.
So you'll compute the error using squared error. However, there's other ways of computing the error which is more statistically robust to noise and captures the distributions or underlying distribution of the data properly. However, for those of you who are new to the game and just use cross-entropy error for classification as a start would be my recommendation, and you will get a lot of mileage out of it. If it doesn't work for you, there are going to be examples later on
yeah.
that I will walk you through where we will use other types of errors.
Yeah.
Okay. So now this is called my loss function. So the red box is the model, the green box is the loss function.
Okay.
So let's now see how we are going to get this, instead of relying on our magical powers to estimate these weights and biases out of a random pool of numbers, how we can let the machine do some of these work for us.
Yeah.
Okay. So we start with the MNIST database, the training database, and we draw a sample of 128 images. It could be anything, samples. These are 128 samples. We call it a mini batch. And these are the corresponding images laid out in the vector format. So we had previously had this just one row. Now think about it. I have stacked a whole bunch of them together.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And corresponding to those images, I have the one-hot encoded array that is my label.
That's the actual labels.
That's the actual labels. So what I'm going to do is estimate these weights and biases that I have worked out before via a machinery that will be provisioned by CNTK.
Yeah.
Okay. So it mirrors this red box is the red box that I was alluding to in my previous slide.
Model.
You can see here I'm multiplying this input data set represented by X with the corresponding weights. Now this is a little bit advanced in the sense for some of you who are not familiar with matrix operations. Initially, in the last slide, I was having just one row. But in modern machines, you can do a set of these images in a very rapid way by using matrix operations. So in this operation takes this whole data, multiplies it with this weight, adds the bias, and produces the output of that one of the summation nodes, but not just one, but 10 of those in this case.
Okay. Actually, this step consists of many, many multiplication operation in a single time, I guess.
Yeah. Correct. So it does a full multiplication of all those weights across all the pixels and arranges them in the respective order such that we have 10 outputs for each of these data sets. So if there are 128 of these, the output would be 128 samples of those 10 predictions that we have had shown in the previous slides. Okay. Then you already know about the loss. So we have this prediction Z, and we pair it up with their corresponding labels. And here you see I have combined function which cross entropy with softmax. So that's why you see here I have no nonlinearity built into it. It's already factored into the loss function together.
Okay.
And then in addition to the loss, we also want to know that how well this machine is working. So we have something called the classification error, which tells you that if I had these 128 images or digits, how many of those were incorrectly predicted? So you can do that by feeding the model here, output of the model Z here, and then the corresponding label Y. Yeah.
And this actually looks like real code when I'm looking at this. So.
Yes, these are exactly how you would program it in CNTK, which in the slide deck you will get the corresponding tutorial and links to it. So that you can go online and download the notebook and run it.
So it's pretty straight translation from the equations you were drawing on the previous page to actual real code.
Yes. So if you might say from a PowerPoint slide to code, this is we would like to show you the code in the format that actually represents the code. And this is the overarching theme of the subsequent series where and the ones that I'm representing in the slide will actually be the code itself. So here you can see the trainer, which is actually the engine, which takes the model, the red block, and the loss, the error, and something called a learner, which helps us get the corresponding weights and biases. We won't have time to get into that. But if you combine them together, create this trainer object, then you can just call trainer.train underscore minibatch, and you can feed in as many samples of these X's you can pull randomly from this train database and get an estimate for this W and B.
Okay.
Right.
So now that you have a set of W's and B's, what we want to know is that if I give this model some unforeseen data, can I see what the results was going to look like? So what we do is we don't sample from the mini batch, the train database, but we pull from the test database here.
Unseen data.
Unseen data, correct. And again, we pull a certain amount of data. In this case, doesn't have to be 128, could be anything. So in this case, I'm saying for illustration, 32 images. And these are, we have already learned these weights and biases, so no change happens. And we also pull the corresponding labels, so that we can compare the outcome of our model, whatever it predicts, using this weight, and then compute the error between the two, the labels and the corresponding predictions made by the model, using the weights that we have trained in the previous slide. Okay, and this returns the classification error as percent incorrectly labeled MNIST images.
Yep.
So it gives you an idea how good your model is. Ideally, your training and the error that you get from training of the during the training stage of the MNIST image database should be close to what you get from the test.
So if we are not happy with the weights, because the error rate is very high, in the beginning we have 10 digits, we have around 700 weights per digit, so 7,000 weights.
Yeah.
So with this huge matrix multiplication, we compute 7,000 weights, and we are not happy with that weights. So we have to redo all this.
Yeah, so there are different ways of dealing with that. And you could train it further. Maybe you haven't trained long enough. Or there are parameters associated with the learner that you need to tweak. And you will see those parameters in the tutorials.
Yeah.
So I would highly recommend that you play with it. You make them high and see what happens, mm-hmm. and make them very low and see what happens.
Yep.
Usually, I'll give you a clue that if you make it lower, it would take longer to train, mm-hmm. but you will get a pretty decent model. So depends how fast you want to go. You can try the limits of your trainer using the tutorial to find those right sweet spots. So now you want to, you have trained the model, you have tested it, you're happy. Now you want to deploy it on your phone. So say you want to do an app where for any handwritten digit, it'll predict what it is. So what you can do is just take that model, which is just these parameters, weights, and biases,
mm-hmm.
and build an app or some APIs somehow to get the data from handwritten digits from your phone or whatever you might have, and feed it into the model and call this function called model.eval, okay, with some new data set. Note here, there's no Y involved here. There's no labels that you need. It'll just predict whatever it thinks that is the most likely. In this case, you see that the purple box is the highest number, 0.7, so it would have predicted the digit 9.
Okay.
So,
sorry. When you train the model, it's easy to just save it out to disk?
Yeah, you can save it out to the disk, or some people hold in memory. Depends on your application.
Okay, and then so when you deploy it or whatever, you just call model.load in some way, and it actually loads it up the model, and then you can play with it.
That's
and
right.
Do eval there.
That's right.
Okay.
And many people actually, even during, this is called checkpointing, and we'll come back to later in the series, that even during training phase, they will do some checkpoints where they'll store partial trained models into as snapshots.
Oh, okay.
So that they can later on see how the, as they progress through the training, how it performs against data that is unseen.
Okay.
So when you have this model and want to use it, you don't need to redo all this computation again. It's there. And I can call this model from any programming language.
Yeah, you could load up this eval function, can be run for from different APIs and build your application around it.
Okay.
So here are some of the pointers for folks. We are on the GitHub. You can go, and there's a rich set of information that you can find out. There are a whole bunch of tutorials, and I highly recommend you trying these. And the tutorial that I just walked you through is the CNTK 101, the logistic regression here. It's kind of small, but you can start fiddling around with it. And these notebooks, if you are, ideally I would like you to download and host it on your local machine. It's we have automated set of installers that will help you install in either Windows or Linux boxes. GPU is preferred, but you can run many of these notebooks in CPU only. It will just take longer, take some more coffee or something. and then you can do that. Or if you really don't want to install and just want to get onto the freeway, but kind of a slow freeway, if you might think about what it means, you can go onto the VMs hosted on Azure notebooks. These are CPU-based VMs, so the notebooks will run. And the first few 100 series notebooks run pretty well, actually.
Yeah.
Even though I might say slow, but it's not that slow.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. All you need is an Outlook or a Hotmail ID. And then we really, if you get stuck, please don't hesitate asking questions on Stack Overflow. Please add the CNTK tag so that we can we can pull out your questions with ease and with agility and respond to you quickly.
Now, your team is doing all of their development in open source, right?
Yes.
Okay, great. So they can actually go to your GitHub and see what's going on there. They can look at branches, and they can look at issues and things like that and see what's up.
Exactly. So if you see here, this is our GitHub repository. You can create a fork. You can look into any of the enlistments that we have. Our development framework is completely in the open, so there are no internal branches.
Excellent.
So we do believe in this open source community and the power that it gives. We are seeing a lot of momentum now come through users contributing back to the toolkit. Yeah.
Oh, okay, great. Cool. So people can even contribute back to it. That's great.
Yes. So if just to give you a quick preview on what these tutorials are, what I have here for you is a classification task. Instead of 10 digits, what I have is a simulated data sets of cancer versus non-cancer data. So mm-hmm. the red dots are cancerous, so indicate that this patient has cancer, and the blue dots mean that this patient has benign disease, yeah. which is not as serious. And the two features I'm using here just for illustrative purposes is age and the tumor size. And mm-hmm. the idea is to learn a linear separator. Like as you said, that the model was indeed a linear yeah. model. So you can see we will learn how to plot this line here. This is exactly the code that I walked you through with logistic regression. Do read through it to understand the different components that you need to provision. So for instance, this is data reading, there is data processing, then yeah. there's model, there's learning to train the model, and then the prediction or the evaluation, exactly the way the slide had yeah. shown you. And then once you have that, you can see, if you can zoom here, you can find out that I'm multiplying the weights times the bias here to get the model out. And you can see this is exactly what I'd covered earlier.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you can see the parameter Z. That is the output of the linear layer. And then you can train it using the loss. And you can also have the classification error, which I talked about here. You can then train your model. There's a lot of boilerplate code here, so feel free to use it. Also, what I was alluding to, I think, Mustafa, you asked me that how to play around with the learning rates. So here, there are a bunch of parameters that yeah. you can tweak, and you can see how well it converges. Mm-hmm. You'll see a display of error rates that you can plot.
Yeah.
These are all in Python notebook, so you can add your own favorite ggplot or whatever you want to see in terms of as the training progresses, what all metrics you want to see. And finally, you should get something like this.
And they're all Jupyter notebooks. They're all runnable locally.
Yes.
And CNTK, I noticed that you guys have added just a Python installer, so you don't have to go through the full install process. You can
yes.
just install the wheel.
Correct. You can.
Great.
It's very convenient for you. But if you have needs, feel free to reach out to us through the avenues that yeah. I just described before. I'll just back up the slides so that you can yeah. see what all resources you have.
Actually, the last few slides are just a screenshot of the Jupyter notebook that
correct.
we mentioned. So it is like a book format. I mean, step by step, you can read instructions and immediately run the code inside the tutorial and go to the end of the demo that we showed.
The thing that I like about them is you can tweak the parameters as you're going.
Yeah.
So you can play with it. You can run it vanilla, you know,
yep.
just run it as you guys
right.
have written it, but then you can tweak the parameters and see the differences right away.
Right.
So that's what I like about Jupyter.
Another use I find quite, I have a lab background, so if you're running different experiments, you can actually save your results in a very convenient
yeah.
fashion. If you're taking it in notebooks or some of whatever form you keep, sometimes it's very difficult what you did, what all parameters. So I keep a snapshot of these notebooks
yeah.
with different settings to see what all it came through. And as I'm training yeah. multiple things separately.
Mm-hmm.
So in moving forward, we will go through more advanced
yeah.
examples,
yeah.
Starting with feedforward, convolutional, all the way to generative adversarial
yeah.
networks, sequence to sequence models, and reinforcement learning,
yeah.
which are on the deeper side of things, so we'll slowly progress through it.
Sounds great.
So it was a really nice introduction to deep learning, and it seems that we will have much exciting topics coming on.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, thanks, Sayan, for your presentation. It was really helpful. Thanks, Michael. Hope to see our developers in the next sessions.
Yeah, I hope this helped.
Yeah.
And keep the feedback coming.
Thanks.